All right, let me try this mode. Can you still hear him?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, he stopped doing that now.
Nope, I can hear him.
All right. Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
I don't know why I did that.
No, it was. I liked it. It was a good tune. All right. So, what are we talking about today?
Today we are gonna talk about Stranger Things 4,
Season 4, Volume 1, because Volume 2 is not out. Naturally,
right?
Probably do another episode on.
Well, they call it Stranger Things 4. Like in the introduction, there's a big like number 4.
Oh yeah,
that shows up behind it. Yeah,
that's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, first impressions?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot more than the last two seasons, to be honest.
Same. I feel like I'm as excited about this season as I was about season one.
Yes. And that's exactly. It's like they found their groove.
Yeah, they finally got their groove back.
Yeah.
Yep. took a while, but it's there. Yeah, and I wasn't really like looking forward to season four. You know, it wasn't on my radar until I started seeing posts on Instagram like, oh, season four dropped.
And yeah. I'm also, like, oh, okay, though, they've I'll been also like Netflix has been teasing that there's going to be a new season for so long.
Yeah.
And at some point, I was just like, okay, now I'm bored.
I know. I was like, just let me know when it's here. All right. Yeah. Stop doing these teasers.
Exactly. Like the anticipation is now done.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But yes, okay. So we have many themes and stuff to talk about. First of all, I say let's tackle Vecna first.
Yes. Because
also, I just want to say I love that they take character names, I guess, from Dungeons and Dragons and use them to describe their real life monsters.
Right.
Like Demogorgon and the Mind Flayer.
Down.
Yeah, yeah. Was it Mind Flayer from
the Mind Flayer, the Demogorgon, the Upside Down, Vecna.
Yes.
The Dark Wizard.
Yeah. I think it helps. Obviously, it helps categorize things for the characters, but it also helps for the audience. So anyway,
I think Vecna. What troubles me about that, though, sorry, before we move on to the topic that you actually wanted to discuss, tackle first, I've always wondered, like, a lot of these creatures, you know, that they're like, oh my god, this is like the Mind Flayer, or like, it's like the Upside Down. Mm-hmm. It's a little too accurate to what's actually happening in Dungeons and Dragons. Like they inform themselves, like the main characters inform themselves a little too much on how to tackle these things based on what they know from Dungeons and Dragons, which really makes me start to think, like, is Dungeons and Dragons creating this stuff? Or like, was Dungeons and Dragons based on these things? And is that why, like, all of their information is so these kids' information on how to deal with these monsters is so accurate?
Okay, so now you sound like that kid Jason, the like, you know, captain of the basketball team, I'm guessing, the one who makes all the speeches as if he's running for president of the United States. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that kid cracks me up.
Yeah, but like, you know, there's a whole, this is also another, actually, let's dive into this first. There's that whole storyline, not storyline, but there's a whole thing where, you know, there's like all these articles coming out about how like D&D is really dangerous for kids and it's turning them to Satan. And this kid, Jason, little, you know, running for political office at some point in his life, apparently now when he's like 17 years old, but like
he's getting his practice in.
Yeah, he fully believes that once he sees his friend die.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yeah, so
he finds out his girlfriend died.
Yeah, exactly. And no, but he didn't believe. Now, before, when he thought his girlfriend died, he just thought Eddie was responsible.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Then when he saw what happened to his friend, witnessed it, he was like, this is the work of the devil.
The devil is real.
Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
And that whole town hall scene and that mob mentality that it so quickly forms when people are scared and do not know.
Yes. Which how this 16, 17 year old was able to rile up a mob. Just like what is wrong with the people of Hawkins, Indiana, that they're like, yes, I'm going to follow this 17 year old kid who's clearly.
Hold up. No, no, I didn't find issue with that. Like, there's no, you're just being ageist now. Okay. There's no issue with a young teenager giving an inspiring speech. That's all well and good. I mean, look at Joan of Arc. Wasn't Joan of Arc like 15?
Yeah. Yeah. But she was also kind of, you know, talking about the whole, like, God spoke to me.
Hello, Jason was talking about demons and devils.
Exactly. Okay. It all seems equally crazy to me. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, whatever. Point is, I just thought that his whole persona was just so, like, even the actor that they picked, I'm like, you literally look like the kid version of someone who's gonna, like, run for political office.
Right.
Like, it's just, and the way that he would give speeches in the pep rally.
No, yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I don't really know if I have anything more to say about it besides just like, well, that's weird. And also just kind of a reflection of America right now.
That, and it kind of, you know, brings, I don't know if to be honest, I don't know if those articles are real from the 80s.
They are. Or but a version really, of them. You know,
yeah, it's really reminiscent of, in more recent times, all these things about like, oh, video games are harmful to kids, and all these parents who are getting up in arms about kids playing violent video games, which I personally have my doubts about that. I remember reading about how, you know, and about, you know, the Columbine shootings back, 20 plus years ago, 20 plus years ago now, how
98.
Yeah. And how like the kids who committed that horrible act were big into video games. Mm-hmm. Turns out the video game they were super into was Tony Hawk skateboarding. So not exactly clear evidence on the violent video games leads to violent acts thing.
Yeah, no, there is no strong correlation. I don't think there's any credible study that says that, you know? Yeah, no, that's very true. And it's 1000% a parallel
with
that debate that's happening right now.
It's interesting how they sort of showed that same level of hysteria, though, happening in the 80s.
Yeah.
Around kids just being kids and playing make-believe, basically.
Yeah. Also, speaking of, video games just reminded me of, I'm going to jump around and back and forth on this, but the scene, now we're jumping from Hawkins to California. No.
Right.
Utah, actually.
Yeah. No,
remember? No. When Mike, Will, and all of them go to Utah to see Dustin's girlfriend because they need her to hack into some computer. And she mentions the internet and they're like, what's the internet?
What's the internet?
He's like, it's going to change the world.
Oh, I love that line. That was so brilliant.
Yeah.
It is. I am trying to think about the history of the internet, though. And it wasn't open back then the way, like, I don't know how this kid could have hacked into the internet from her home computer back in the day, because it used to be a closed circuit military thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're just trying, for the sake of this show that has obviously got a lot of fantastical elements in it,
right,
they've just made her out to be this super genius.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she could try to call in and, you know, use a dial-up modem and connect to the military's internet, but they also showed her hacking on into a school computer record, which that would not have been connected to the internet back in the 80s. So I think there's a little bit of
how did she do that? I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a historical, technological misalignment going on there.
Right, right. So, Okay. Well, that's all I had to say about that. Okay, back to Vecna.
Back to our actual first thing that we wanted to cover. Yes, Vecna.
But still relate to everything we've been talking about. So, I mean, obviously, video games are not the sole reason why anyone becomes, like they're
or even
dangerous or whatever,
dangerous. Or even a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not. So it's interesting how throughout this season seems to target kids that already have some sort of dark past, not dark, like, I mean, like some sort of trauma that they've seen in their past or dealt with.
Trauma or guilt.
Yeah, something like some sort of haunting thing in their past.
I feel like with Vecna, though, it was very specifically guilt that he was targeting.
Yeah.
Whether it's guilt that that his targets already felt or something in their past that he could turn into guilt.
That's true. Yeah. I think that was this case also with Chrissy, the cheerleader. Yeah. Girl, although what was she guilty about? Maybe like her mom made her feel guilty for
being fat.
Yeah, when basically clearly she was not. Yeah. True. Yeah. So that was really interesting. And I was also reading people's posts and opinions about this as well. Mm-hmm. But the scene with Max, clearly Max feels guilty or somewhat guilty about her brother's death from season 3. So, and that whole scene, that epic scene in episode 4 where Vecna's like got her and then Nancy and Robin have figured out like music is the answer and then they have her listen to her favorite song. That whole scene was incredible.
Absolutely.
So well done. So epic. And I love the actress who plays Max, Sadie Sink, I think. Yeah. But that scene, where she starts hearing the song, Vecna's like got his grip on her, and she sees that hole opening and she sees her friends are trying to wake her up from this trance. And then they start playing this like quick montage of all these amazing memories that she has with her friends. Mm-hmm. And the post that I was reading online from some people, they were saying that like they really saw a huge parallel with just like suicidal thoughts and then being reminded of why you want to live, like why you want. And then that's her literally running up that hill and like clamoring back into her life because she doesn't want to let go. And that's also part of like, Vecna definitely represents like guilt taking over and depression and all that. Mm-hmm. And he's saying to all his victims, like, your suffering will end if you just submit to me or whatever he says.
Me.
Yeah. And so, anyway, so I just thought that was really well done. You could see the parallels and yet it was very...
It was a great metaphor. Mm-hmm. I mean, built into the story, but also an excellent metaphor for, I mean, we're not psychiatrists or psychologists, so we're just speaking as lay people here. But it seems like an excellent metaphor for pulling oneself, how one can pull themselves out of depression and out of and pull themselves away from anxiety and suicidal thoughts that may be plaguing them. It also reminded me of this one line from Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Let's hear it.
From the wisest person to have ever existed in any TV show ever, Uncle Iroh, in Tales of Ba Sing Se, when he's helping that mugger, this guy who was trying to mug him and basically lays him flat. And he's like, "Your stance is terrible." And then they're like sipping tea and he's like, "Wait, you really think I can be a masseuse?" And he's like, "Sure, yeah, you can do anything." And this mugger who's like, "Wow, I've never had anybody believe in me before." And Uncle Iroh says this thing where he says, "While it's best to believe in oneself, a little bit of help from others can go a long way." Mm-hmm. And
good line.
That line, I don't know, it just stuck with me. It just sticks with me through so many things. And it really is, Max in this scene in episode 4, she's pulling herself out, but it is that little bit of help from her friends that is going a really long way towards helping her pull herself out of this very, very, in this case, literally dark place.
We still haven't done an episode on Avatar: The Last Airbender.
I know, because it's too big.
It's too big. We would have to spend like a month.
Yes.
A month's worth of episodes just doing that.
Right.
Okay. Well, I wanted to segue into another topic. The one thing that I found slightly annoying was, so we understand fully what sort of guilt Chrissy is dealing with. And then we also get an understanding what kind of guilt Fred, you know, the guy who is Nancy's assistant or something, basically. Right.
Assistant editor?
Yeah, there we go. We understand his guilt. He was in this very scary car crash where his friend died. And then there was Patrick, the dude on the basketball team.
Right.
And the one black dude. And we never get his backstory, but we know Max's backstory, and then also by the at the very end, the finale of this season slash volume, we have known Nancy's guilt, and you know Nancy's stuck in that trance. That's how they end the finale, basically. But we know her guilt from season one, so it just bothers me that, of course, the one black person you did not give a full backstory for. And, like, it didn't even need to take that much effort. You just needed to throw in a few little montage scenes like you did with Fred.
Yeah.
And
or even, like, a half a line or something.
Right. So this is a perfect segue into also another topic we want to talk about, which is the lack of the – well, this was, like, racist. But the lack of racism depicted in
the show, in the world of the show.
Right, exactly.
Slightly racist, the fact that the writers didn't give this Patrick kid any kind of backstory for why he got twisted up into, you know, into a marionette thingy. Yeah. But in the world of Stranger Things, it considering that it's happening in the 80s, there is a surprisingly low level of racism.
Yeah, it's just sort of, I mean, I know the argument is just going to be, well, it's not about that. The show's not about that. And, like, we're talking about monsters and there's just too much going on. Like, there's Eleven's whole story and then there's the story with Joyce and Hopper and there's Will and Mike and in California, whatever, you know? And it's like, and there's Hawkins and whatever, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I would say throughout this series, there hasn't been that much reference in general to people's races and racism, except for the one very obvious scene from season two, which was like the Halloween themed season, where the, you know, all four of them, Dustin, Mike, Will, Lucas, they dressed up as the Ghostbusters.
Right.
And Mike was telling Lucas, like, you have to be, wait, what's the black character's name? Black Ghostbuster? I'm forgetting his name.
I forget any of their names, to be honest.
Yeah, same. Actually, I've forgotten all their names. But anyway, he was like, you have to be him. That's you. That's you. And Lucas is like, why? Is it because I'm black? You know, like, and which I was like, good for you, Lucas. Yeah. Call out your friends for their shitty behavior. So anyway, that is really the only moment that I can really think of.
I think what bothers me is not that they don't address racism in this show, because like you said, I think it is fair to say that's not what this show is about. That's not what they're trying to cover, but there's too many situations where it seemed like they would have faced a certain amount of race, where Lucas especially would have experienced or faced a certain amount of racism, and it's just not portrayed in those scenes. And that's what kind of always kind of rubbed me, like, wait, why are they so chill?
Yeah.
Why is everyone so chill? And especially I'm thinking of like the gang, you know?
Yeah.
Not so much them sort of treating Lucas poorly, but maybe their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Maybe their parents treating Lucas poorly. And that always struck me as like, huh, these are surprisingly chill, progressive 80s parents in the 80s.
Right. In Indiana.
Good for them.
Yeah. I remember in season two when they introduced Erica, Lucas's little sister.
Yes.
I remember feeling some relief. And they've shown their parents too. And I remember feeling some relief, like, oh, finally, there's like another black person. It's right. Literally, Lucas isn't the only token one, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, besides that, there really hasn't been anyone else. Like,
not really. I guess there was Patrick. And I mean, I guess there was a few guys on the basketball team.
Yeah. Which I was like, you better include some there because we all know.
And also, realistically, how many minorities would be living in Hawkins, Indiana?
Right. That I was also thinking about that because I was thinking about in the lab where Eleven was raised.
Right. You
know, even that whole group of kids, it was mostly white. There was maybe one Asian looking kid, ambiguously ethnic kid, but that was it. Like they didn't have, and then I was like, well, is the doctor researcher dude racist? And like, he's like, oh, well, like there were no black kids.
Yeah. Which also, you know, which that actually, even though they didn't address it, I felt like that kind of aligned with the way racism would have operated.
Especially in the sciences.
Especially in sciences and in the 80s, where Dr. Bennett and his team are looking for quote-unquote special kids, all right? And I can see this group of scientists just assuming that specialness wouldn't exist in the black community.
Right,
like,
yes.
I can see that being there.
Yes, that's exactly, that was my thought process as well.
Yeah.
I just hope that in the writer's room, they actually had this conversation and they made a conscious decision to do that.
Yes.
We forgot about the black kids or really any other race, you know.
I agree. I will actually give the writers a pass if this was an active conversation they had and made this conscious choice and not give them a pass if it was a fluke.
Right. Exactly.
Yes. Agreed.
I did think it was interesting that, like, the school counselor lady, she was Asian.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, they've inserted, they're still sort of tokens, in my opinion, but
yes.
They have inserted these sorts of characters throughout the show a little bit.
Which also kind of matches up with the way, at least in my idea, you know, I wasn't, like, consciously alive in the 80s. Like, I was alive in the 80s, but...
Right. Right.
I wasn't aware of 80s culture because I was too young. But from my understanding from movies, that it fits. Like, that there would just be that one token Asian person who happens to be the school counselor.
Right.
You know? Probably way overqualified for her position. Because that's what it would have taken back then. But that kind of matches up.
Yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It, like, it bothered me, but then I thought about it and I was like, I guess that fits with that era, with that time period.
Mm-hmm. So I think what we're most upset about is Lucas's experiences not adding up.
His experience seems a little bit too happy.
Right.
Like,
which is funny because they're literally fighting for their lives, like,
and
every day.
Also, in general, this gang of kids is dealing with quite a bit of bullying.
Yes. Yeah. Seriously.
Which, segue into our next topic, bullying in the 80s and in school in general.
Right. That don't was do it. Horrific. Yeah, don't be a bully, okay?
Yeah.
Or a racist. Don't be a racist bully either.
Especially not that.
Yeah.
Don't be any of those things, but especially not a combination.
Thank you for coming to our TED Talk. But yeah, the bullying was very intense. And
extreme, too.
Frankly, it was kind of triggering for me because, as you know, we both were bullied in school. Not fun. Yeah, that was, I don't know. It's like extreme and it's not like, it was so like basic bullying too. Like this Angela bitch. I was like, oh God. Like, I'm like, you're so lame. Please. I was really happy when L hit her with
I was going to say, what was your reaction when Eleven grabbed a roller skate?
Yes.
And bashed Angela in the face. What went through your head when you saw that moment?
I was so excited. I think I screamed like, yeah! Like when I saw that scene, I was really excited for it. Obviously, I don't condone violence, yada, yada, yada. But I've also been in that situation where, I mean, I didn't make anyone bleed, but I did get so angry once that I punched a kid in the head. And
Good for you.
Yeah. And I was like, this was after like 2 or 3 years of him persistently bullying me and my friend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like I'm like, it could have been much worse and much earlier. So
yeah.
Let's be real. But yeah, I think we were 12 years old. And yeah, I mean, it very much just reminded me of that. I fully understood the rage that Elle felt in that moment and just wanting to do something drastic to address it, because you just feel so powerless and you're sick of feeling powerless at that point.
I was actually talking to a friend who said that it made her like gasp when that happened. Like she couldn't believe that it happened. But
which part? Elle hitting her with the
hitting Elle hitting her bully in the face with the roller skate.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Technically that could be considered assault with a deadly weapon.
Probably. All right. Yes.
But I saw that scene and much like you, I was like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That bitch deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, she was asking for it.
For real. Yeah.
And at some point it's just like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It did not make me gasp. It made me, I saw it coming as soon as Elle started rage walking and marching over to Angela. I was like, oh, she's going.
I was like, she's going to get it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I totally saw it coming, and I completely understood the frame of mind that Eleven was in to make that to react in that way. You know, it was, I thought, a completely understandable reaction.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't ever condone violence in any of its ways, shape, or forms. There are much healthier ways to express oneself and deal with this kind of psychological torture. Mm-hmm. But girl had it coming.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you get, okay? You can't just treat people.
That had it coming.
You can't just treat people like shit and expect to be no consequences. Hello?
Or no reactions.
Yeah. It's like.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I fully understand.
And then.
Sorry. I also thought it was kind of the whole tension between Elle and Mike was very interesting to me.
Yes. But
it also, I mean, Mike has been bullied, you know, his whole life. But, like, he just didn't seem to understand. Like,
because I think. Because he didn't see it. He never knew the extent of it.
Yeah, he didn't know, but he saw what had just happened to Elle in on the roller skating rink.
Yes.
Like,
and it's a little bit different.
I
would say that it's a little bit different to understand that if you are looking at it, if you are only seeing it as an isolated instance of bullying.
Okay, but also found it very disappointing that Mike and Will didn't do anything while it was happening. Like, later, they had a delayed reaction, and they tried getting that guy to stop playing music or whatever he was doing. But, like, I would have run out onto the rink and, like, pushed people over and gotten Elle out of that circle of hell, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
but also, at the same time, like, it's kind of like an emergency situation where you, like, just don't know what's happening or how to react or really understand that, like, oh, there's actual a danger thing going on here, because you know, Mike on the one hand was being told constantly, oh, this is my friend, you know, like, he's being told by Elle, oh, this is my friend Angela,
yeah,
and he's like, oh, the Angela you're talking about in your letters, got it, all
right,
this is your friend. And then Will kind of, like, he himself is kind of being bullied and kind of, you know, they've made it pretty obvious that Will is gay.
Yeah.
All right. And so he's also living in this world of, like, he could be completely ostracized any minute as soon as anybody finds out. So, you know, like, I feel like their reactions, while not the best, are also completely understandable given the context of what was going on.
But I don't know. I'm just, like, speaking as... I know, I'm speaking as someone who is loyal to my friends, though, you know, Like, I just expect better. I'm not here to hear, listen to excuses for Mike and Mike and Will. So I'm going to remain angry at them.
Okay. And you can do whatever. And that's fair. You are allowed to.
Right. Thank you.
You're allowed to.
Thank you.
Which, speaking of Will, I think we should also talk about Robin.
Yes. Yes.
And her having to hide in the closet.
Mm-hmm. Except to Steve. In front of Steve, who she came out to. Which, that scene was so, definitely my favorite scene of season three.
Yes.
When she came out to him. And his reaction was just so, it was so nice. It was like, wow, Steve, you're great.
Steve really went from being the biggest douchebag on the planet to being the absolute best.
Yeah. You know that, what's best that line?
Best babysitter ever.
What's that line in Lord of the Rings that Samwise says to Faramir in The Two Towers? When he like lets Sam and Frodo go.
I know the scene that you're talking about.
He says something like, you have shown your true value, sir. Or something like that. What is it, value?
Worth?
No, I think it's value. Your quality. He's like, you have shown your quality, sir, or something like your true quality, blah, blah. And so that's how I feel about Steve. Like, you have shown the moment in season one when he picked up a baseball bat covered in nails and swung at a monster for his friends. I was like, you have shown your true quality, Steve.
Was it for Dustin and the kids that he swung the bat for?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think so.
At that point, I would say
babysitter.
They weren't even friends then.
No, that's true.
That was the moment that Steve showed himself to be somebody worthy of being friends with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Good for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, Robin. Robin and Will, I guess, are both. Well, they haven't really spelled it out for us. And the actor who plays Will keeps saying in interviews like, oh, it's up to the audience's interpretation, how they see Will's sexuality, blah, blah, blah. I think he's been told like to keep his mouth shut until more things come out in volume 2 and also season 5. So
is there going to be a season 5?
Yes, they have confirmed there's going to be a season 5. I thought they were setting this up to like end this season, but
honestly what I thought too. I was like, all right, season 4 is going to be the end of Stranger Things, especially since they divided it. A, first of all, each episode is as long as a freaking movie.
So long. Do you know that the last episode in volume 2 that they're going to release,
it's going to be like 2.5 hours long.
It's going to be 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. Like, I mean, geez, talk about taking the binge model to the extreme.
I mean, I personally enjoyed this season so much. I was really excited to hear that. So I don't know.
Yes. But also at some point, like I want things to wrap up.
Yeah.
Although the way this show is structured, it could kind of go on just forever.
No, I think they have. I was trying to read some interviews with the Duffer brothers who created the show, and it sounds like they know exactly the story arc and everything that they're going to cover in season 5, and it's going to have hopefully a proper conclusion and all that. So,
which I'm sure they totally ripped from Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, probably. Oh, yeah. I was going to say earlier, maybe at the end of season 5, at the conclusion of the series, we'll just find out that this is like Jumanji and they've all been stuck in like a D&D game.
A giant D&D game.
That'd be really funny. Yeah.
Like Jumanji.
Right. Okay, wait. But going back to Robin, did you actually want to say something about her?
Yeah. But it kind of reminded me of this theory that my English teacher in high school had about the end of the Harry Potter books.
Yes.
Which is that you find out at the end of book 7 that all of this has just been in Harry's fantasy, and he just wakes up in his little broom closet underneath the stairs. And
I remember
that's how the book series would end.
When you told me that, I was like, that is so dark. Like, why? Why would you do that? Like, just extinguish the light of hope out of every child's eyes. Just ridiculous.
When I heard that theory, I wanted that to be the case.
I mean, yeah, it's brilliant, but very depressing.
Yes, very Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, back to Robin.
To Robin.
What did you actually want to say about her?
So I love that conversation that she was having in the car where she's like, yes, Steve, what's the worst that can happen to you if you ask out a girl? You get rejected? Oh, boo-hoo. If I ask out a girl and I get rejected, next thing I know, I'm the town pariah.
Yeah.
You know, like, it really does highlight the stakes, I think, for a lot of ostracized and targeted communities, you know, for when they come out of the closet, you know, I mean, that sentence, like, yes, it seems very obvious and it comes up a lot, I think, but it also kind of, I feel like could have woven into a similar theme with Lucas, where he was talking about being part of the basketball team and finally not being bullied, you know? That was something where it's like, hey guys, this is our ticket out of the nightmare that is our middle school and high school experience. You know, like, I feel like that could have, they could have talked about a more racism theme there too, where he's like, I'm tired of being bullied because I'm black. If I make it in with the cool kids, life won't be so tough for me.
Right.
And rough. Like, they could have done that, but they didn't.
Right.
And also, it then also made me think about Steve's transformation from season one all the way to now, where I feel like the whole culture of bullying, it's a trap in both directions. You know, Lucas got sucked into the whole, this whole crusade that, you know, politician basketball captain, what's his face, was pulling his team into, where he's like, all right, I know they're going to hurt my friends. I know this is wrong, but I got to stick with it so that I can end up with a better life for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I'm glad he abandoned it early enough. Yeah. I was like, Lucas, please don't do this. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, the more I thought about it, how the culture of while being bullied can feel as much of a trap in many circumstances, I feel like being a bully is also a very entrapping culture.
Right.
You know, like, it does make me wonder about Angela, whether she had things in her life that made her feel like she had to pick on somebody so that she could stay on top of the social ladder and not end up in the same position as Eleven, where maybe she's afraid that she becomes the one who is bullied.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, not to say that she wasn't asking for a roller skate to the face.
Right.
Because she totally was. And it made me go, yes! You know, fist bump.
Yeah.
Yes! When she got smacked in the face with a roller skate. I'm totally okay with that. But it does bring up a lot of complicated questions about how none of us can ever know what somebody else may exactly be going through.
No, very true. Very true. I also just, I want to go back to Robin again because, so, I mean, the reason why we love these characters is because they're so multifaceted, but
yes,
I also feel like, so I was having this conversation with some friends before too, that like one of my friends, she thought that they kind of did a disservice to Robin this season because in the last season they were, you know, Robin was like, portrayed as very smart, intellectual, put together. She figured out the whole like Russian code thing, blah, blah, blah. And my argument back to my friend was like, no, you know, I thought she was just as smart and intellectual in this season.
Yeah.
Because she figured out the music thing. She paid attention to that. She, I mean, like she's very observant and keeping an eye out on different things. Like she's constantly like solving problems. But what I think we've always sort of known about Robin, but haven't necessarily seen, is that she is a slightly socially awkward person, especially in new settings and with new people. So, you know, we saw her in a newer setting, especially with Nancy. Nancy was the popular girl and whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, I really enjoyed their interactions, too. And also the way that Robin stood up to that one professor, Like, she was making this impassioned statement about how women are never taken seriously, mm-hmm. especially in the sciences. You know, women yep. who are just trying to do research or whatever it is, they right. are completely dismissed. And yeah, I just thought that was great.
That speech was fantastic.
Yeah.
And it was so true. It was yeah. like, you could tell, like, she's giving this speech, like, from the heart.
Yeah. So not only is, you know,
the shirt is giving me a rash.
Right. I mean, not only is Robin so great at representing, first of all, the gay and queer community, you know, she's also representing women, but she's also representing, like, weird kids and kids with social anxiety and all right. this stuff. So I just, yeah, like, there are parts of Robin and scenes with Robin where I feel very seen. There's also scenes with Nancy where I feel, and Max mm-hmm. and you know, and Steve and all of them. So I think they do a good job on this yeah. show of, again, such multifaceted characters.
Yes. So they're complex. They are full human beings.
Exactly. Yes.
And to get into a little bit of not so high-minded stuff, uh-huh. Is it just me, or are they totally setting up Nancy and Steve to get back?
Yes, they're totally doing that. Yeah, 100%. Yes. Yeah, yes. I definitely felt that.
I'm glad.
I don't know. Huh? I don't think I mind it. Like, before, I was really rooting for Nancy and Jonathan.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, yeah, Steve is not the one for her. But now it's just, I don't know. Like, Steve has changed so much.
Yeah. He's become the right person.
Yeah.
I actually think Steve has improved and Nancy's gotten worse.
I agree.
Yeah. And
same with Jonathan.
Jonathan was kind of a pothead even before he started doing pot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
He
always annoyed me. And I have no reason why. Like, you remember me complaining about, like, and, like, making fun of him just, like, running around the woods being like, Nancy. Yeah.
That's true. I forgot about that.
I don't know why. I always just kind of hated him. For no rational reason.
I liked him, but, you know, I read another comment where someone was saying that, like, Jonathan was always their favorite character, and they feel like this season they just did nothing really with him. There was no sort of development. There was nothing.
Yes.
You felt like he was not really offering much besides pot to the other characters and the storyline.
I agree with that sentiment.
Yeah.
However, the difference is I was okay with it. Because I just want less Jonathan in my life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're entitled to your opinions. So, yeah. I feel bad for him. So I feel bad
for him as a person.
No, I mean, but I feel bad because I think the writers did not really help him out at all. Like, so.
I don't think there's any amount of help that can help out.
Oh, character. My God. You're so mean, Amon. You're so mean. You're bullying Jonathan now.
I'm allowed to hate. He's not a real person. Okay, all right. Whatever. I'm talking about this poorly written character who never really offered much.
Yeah. I really do think I need to rewatch seasons 1, 2, and 3 because there's just so much I don't remember. And so, like, I totally forgot, agreed. By the way, we haven't even talked about Hopper and Joyce, but I totally forgot yeah. that Hopper was previously married and had a kid.
Yeah.
Died. But yeah, like, yeah. totally forgot about that until he brought it up. And I was like, oh yeah, he really has a lot to be depressed about. Wow. Like, stuck in a Russian prison. Like, damn. that was very.
So speaking yeah. of which, how did you feel about Hopper ending up in Russia?
I was like, that sucks. I guess you got teleported there. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't like as compelled by that story. I mean, I love Joyce. And the thing is, like, Joyce has always been this amazing, badass, ferocious mom, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah. she was like, I don't care if you, in season 1, she's like, I don't care if you don't believe me. My son is trapped and he's alive. I don't know what dead body you're showing me, but that's not my son. And she was like, I'm going to get Christmas lights and I'm going to figure this shit out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she just did it. And she did not care what people thought. And she saved her son's life. And she has saved countless lives this way. And again, she saved Hopper's life. Like, very on track for her. But I was not as into the whole Russia storyline.
Hmm. Fair. I don't know. I kind of enjoyed it. But the thing that ruined it for me was I was unsatisfied with the explanation of how and why mm-hmm. Hopper ended up in Russia.
Yeah.
And that for me was a key component that was missing to make this storyline compelling.
Yeah, you know? I completely agree.
It can't be random.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be random. Like, if it's random, then it's stupid. Then it's a lot like Eleven's side plot that she had, what was it, in season 2 or season 3, where she just, like, ends up with these runaways who happen to be part of the same, like, twisted brain program that she was.
But how did they escape? Like, very... Okay, now can we go into the finale? Because, like...
Yeah.
They made it seem like all the kids died then. So when did...
Oh, remember they talked about... Oh, this is back when 8 was still here.
Yeah.
So some kids had already escaped. And those are the runaways that Eleven had ended up with earlier. But that was still a completely pointless side quest.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, what is the point if you're not going to do anything more with it?
But I do have to say, in this season, they fixed the Eleven side quest. Because it actually tied in to the main storyline properly. And I think that's what was missing with the whole Hopper thing.
Right.
Is that Russia storyline didn't tie into the main storyline properly. So they fixed one side plot formula only to ruin it again with a different side plot.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think
that's
what
bothered me. Like, in and of itself, I feel like if Stranger Things 4 was only about saving Hopper from Russia, it would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But it wasn't purely about that. And therefore, it was missing a proper tie-in. Maybe with Volume 2, they'll tie it in properly and it'll fix it for me. But as of right now, I am unsatisfied with that whole side quest.
I mean, same here. I think that's why I just didn't really care, because I was like, you haven't given me a proper explanation as to why he's even there. How did he end up there? We all thought he died, you know?
Yeah. Why did he end up there?
Yeah.
Like, yes, they very much implied at the end of season 3 that Hopper died, but also implied that he might still be alive.
They had a post-credit scene.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. But, like, I was expecting a little bit more about how he ended up in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they'll tie it back in. You know, maybe Vecna's been going around in Russia and Hopper ended up through a side portal. But right now, unhappy.
Right. Okay, then. Well, all right. Have we covered everything?
I think so. I know we definitely talked about a bunch of stuff we weren't planning on talking about.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Do we want to talk about, like, how Vecna is one? That was crazy. Oh, that whole twist.
That twist was crazy. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was great.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah. I was not expecting
Vecna to be a more ancient evil, but I liked that he wasn't.
Yeah. So, okay. So in the show, one was Victor Creel's son, and he was just born with weird powers?
Apparently.
Okay, so hopefully they go a little bit more into explaining what the hell that's about. Like, how, why. And then he does all that to his family. And what, he just, like, didn't like his family? I forget.
I think so.
Like, he was just like, what's the point of life? You go to work, you sleep, you come home, whatever. You know, like, what was he saying?
I think his issue was that he could also read minds. So, like, he knew their thoughts.
No, he couldn't. He couldn't read minds.
Yeah. He was always like, yeah, this is what she really thinks. This is what he really thinks. And my dad only cared about this or that or whatever. That's how he got into, that's how he was able to figure out what they were guilty about.
Oh,
you know? Interesting. And so can you imagine as a kid when your parents, even if it's a white lie, if they're lying to your face, you know, about something. Oh, the dog didn't die. He went to the farm to be happy, you know? Or if your parents are trying to hide an argument that they're having to spare you from being traumatized by it. And if you're a kid who can read your parents' minds, all right, you are going to be exposed to certain types of things that your parents want to protect you from before you're old enough to really process it, you know, right. And he's affected by that at such a young age, mm-hmm. you know, he's probably spent his entire life, childhood onwards, being like, everyone's a liar and full of shit.
Yeah. You know what this, who he reminds me of a little bit is Kilgrave from Jessica Jones.
Yes, a little bit.
Because he also just has, you know, crazy powers. And because yeah. of that, he's never able to be like, you know, like disciplined, like as by yeah. a parent, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of similar. It's giving me that vibe. But yeah, so, okay. So then he does that to his family. His mm-hmm. dad goes to prison. He is then, he's like in a coma or something. His dad is told that he dies. But he doesn't yeah. actually die. The scientist dude, Marvin, whatever.
Dr. Bennett.
Yeah. He starts basically experimenting on him.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. And then he turns into one.
Yep.
And then one basically tricks 11.
Uh-huh. Into freeing him.
Into freeing him. So I think, you know how he said, like, we all have this, like, chip in our necks or something.
And right.
Blah. I think he was the only one who had it, right? Obviously.
Yes. Then, yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Dang. That was just so crazy. And then we find out that he's the one who killed all the kids.
Yeah. I don't know, actually. So here's the thing. I'm not sure how I feel about that. All right. Because on the one hand, you have 11 who has these crazy powers and she's going through her life wondering if she is a monster or not. Mm-hmm. All right. And I kind of enjoyed her journey into discovering herself and not just discovering who she is, mm-hmm. but also choosing to be a particular kind of person, despite having the potential for good and bad, mm-hmm. only to make her character more good.
Yeah.
You know, they took away the complexity by introducing one, mm-hmm. you know, and just made 11 a good person, took away the ambiguity of good and bad. All right. And
I would disagree with that because, I mean, throughout the season, she mm-hmm. literally hits Angela in the head, like almost gives her a concussion with a roller yes. skate. You know,
yes.
11 has had a lot of moments of rage. She just always had powers to show it. And usually her rage was just directed at a monster. But that right. doesn't mean, like, I thought it was pretty convincing how she had doubts about herself and doubts about, like, oh my God, am I a monster? Because, like, these are things that I've done. I know that I've done.
Yeah.
And then there were other memories that she kept very buried and she didn't know.
But there was a bit of that moment where it's like, okay, yes, I agree with you. She has had moments of rage, mm-hmm. but she has not had, at least during, since we were introduced to 11 in season one, all right, I don't think she's had a moment of true murder spree of hasn't fellow she, humans.
But hasn't she, like, killed security guards and stuff like that? You know that neck movement she does, which one did, and I was like, oh, she learned it from him. Like, when he's like that whole, like, neck thing, and then, like, people's neck snap in half.
Man,
and
I really gotta rewatch.
I know, same
shit.
Like, I didn't remember until he did that, and I was yeah. like, ooh, that's like an 11 move, which, well, I thought it was an 11 move, but it's a one move. But yeah, yeah, like,
yeah, but okay. Yeah, okay. I can see that. But I feel like taking away the mass murder from her backstory, accidental or not, sort of threw her, took away the doubt from her mind of what kind of person she is without, it turned it into a deus ex machina for her journey.
I don't think so. I disagree.
Of finding out whether she's a good or a bad person.
I disagree. I think it mainly gave her some relief, but it doesn't, like, yeah. completely convince her, oh, I am a good person. Someone give me my halo, you know?
Like, maybe I'm just that automatic of, like, huh, I guess I'm not as, I don't have the potential for the awfulness that I thought I did. I don't know. It felt yeah. very deus ex machina for nah. me on the one hand. All right. So I'm just sharing my thoughts.
I know.
My feels on this subject.
I don't think there
was... But on the other hand, I loved it because it tied into the Vecna thing so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was still plenty of complexity left in that and how she feels about herself. I don't think it was like a huh moment. It was more like a, oh my God, thank God it wasn't me who killed all those kids, you know?
Yeah.
I can
see that too. I'll give you that.
Oh my God.
All right.
So, okay. And then in the end, she throws Vecna into the upside down, or she somehow creates the upside down?
I think Eleven had the power to open up portals
right
to the upside down. All right. I don't think Eleven could create the entirety of the upside down.
I thought I read somewhere that said that she's I don't think that's right. Like whatever headline or whatever article thing I read, I think was wrong. But I need to look more into it.
I mean, I think that the upside down already existed, and that's why Dungeons and Dragons exists, is because somebody went to the upside down and was like, all right, I'm going to turn this into a tabletop game.
If they weren't already traumatized enough to like, what?
You know, people have different ways to artistically express themselves, Lena.
That's true.
Some people, you know, do what Max does, which is draw with crayons. All right. And some people create highly complex tabletop role-playing games.
Cool. Okay, then. On that note, I think we covered pretty much everything now.
Yes.
I am not satisfied.
Now I think we got it.
Well, as always, thank you for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next time.